All righty, we're running slightly late, but nevertheless, we are here. So let us rise and join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. We are short one member today. Director Rice is not available, but we still have a quorum of four, and we will hopefully get the job done as efficiently as we would with five. Legal counsel, Mr. Carmel, do we have anything to report from closed session?
The board continued to instruct its labor negotiators, but nothing to report.
Thank you. Hopefully good news is on the horizon, right? Cool. Do we have any agenda review, additions or deletions? Seeing no response other than basic chatter up here among directors, we'll move forward to the public safety reports. And Commander Nelson from the Sheriff's Department, please step forward. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commander Nelson from the Sheriff's Coast Station. For December, we had 337 calls for service and 38 reports. Last year at that time, we had 236 calls for service and 19 reports. We had no calls for service regarding assault or batteries. We had one call for service regarding a disturbance. We had two calls for service regarding burglaries. Four calls for service regarding thefts. For one of the thefts, we responded to a theft of surf fins from an unlocked vehicle in the 1900 block of Dovedale. No suspect leads at this time. Just a reminder to keep your vehicles locked. Also keep all valuables out of view. We had one call for service regarding a vandalism. No calls for service regarding mail thefts. We had two calls for service regarding phone scams, a very popular scam that's going on right now. Is scammers will call and say that your social security number has been suspended because of suspicious activity or because it's been involved in a crime. Sometimes the scammer wants you to confirm your social security number to reactivate it. Sometimes they'll say your bank account has been seized. Most of the time, they want you to fix the issue by purchasing gift cards and giving them the codes. So that's a very popular one that's going around right now. And then of note, I touched on it last meeting, but we had the Amber Alert suspect last month. So there was an Amber Alert from San Jose last month where a two-year-old child was taken. The vehicle and suspect was located at the Shell gas station here in Cambria. Citizens recognized the vehicle and detained the subject until law enforcement was able to arrive and arrest the subject. And that is all I have for you.
Thank you, Commander Nelson. Any comments or questions from the board? I'd like to ask, when you were talking about calls for service, and you mentioned that last year there were 236 in the month of December, and this year it's 101 more than that. Is there anything that we can attribute that to?
Well, with these numbers, the call for service, so it can really be anything. It can be something that originally comes to our dispatch center and then is transferred. So, like, for example, a disabled motorist. That would count as a call for service, even though that would go to the California Highway Patrol. So those numbers, I mean, it could be various reasons.
I think you're saying it's nothing to necessarily be alarmed about.
Correct.
Okay. Let me ask you one more question. It just popped into my head while you were giving your report. When you talk about scams, obviously when we think of scams, we think of senior citizens. Do young people, like under 35, do they ever get scammed?
Yes. I mean, with now with the scammers, I mean, it comes to your email, everybody's cell phone. So the scammers reach out to them. Myself, I've been, called and emailed multiple scams. I'm sure a lot of us have. It is out there with the younger people also.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Commander, and have a very pleasant and uneventful rest of the week.
Okay, thank you. You too. Take care.
Thank you. Next, our report from Chief Hollingsworth from the Cambria Fire Department. Good afternoon, Chief.
Good afternoon, President Farmer, Board. Thank you for letting me be here today. A relatively short report for you. For the month of January, we had 74 emergency responses. That brings the total for 2019 to 1,088. It's a 121 call increase, which is almost 13% from this time last year. And it is a steady increase. If you look at the long haul, what we've noticed over the past 20 years, we're noticing about that much of an increase each year. So you see us on the road more responding to more incidents, and that's just the nature of this business and how it works. We finished the year with a call for service to local people that lived here in the community at 76.4%, and then serving those that come outside of the community at 23.6%. I wanted to report that we had a very successful donation period during the Season of Hope for the community. Remember that the Cambria Fire Department is a recipient and hosts that. And we end up taking in donations for both Toys for Tots and the food bank. It was very successful. We had to have the personnel from each place come and pick up the receptacles multiple times during the month and a half that we hosted that, which is, I'm happy to report, because that's all examples of the community giving back to those that need assistance. I wanted to thank you for the authorization to move forward with the radio purchase. I have one of them that has come in on me now. This is the new compliant radio that we can use throughout the entire state. It's digital. It's fully programmable. It meets all FCC guidelines. It's fully expandable for the next number of years. We're still working on additional programming and installation stuff. And again, this is the first half of that request. We're going to be looking at a request to OES this next fiscal year to replace the entire mobile fleet, which is all the radios that are installed in all the vehicles. So it was more important at this point to be able to get radios in the hands of the personnel to be able to use them. But again, thank you for letting us move forward with that. And I wanted to remind you that if you've seen any indication of it, we have been supporting and assisting with the pile burning that's continuing to go in and around the community, helping CAL FIRE do that with our personnel as available. They've been able to do quite a bit of pile burning out on the ranch, also enhancing the shaded fuel break project that was done a couple of years ago on Cambria Pines Road. There is additional burning that's going to be done up in the Cavell Ranch area off of Bridge Street. There's been about 100 acres that have been treated by crews led by our Fire Safe Focus Committee and members that are on there, and we have a number of piles that are going to get burned. All of that is weather dependent, and the nice thing about it is that for the most part, nobody knows it's even happening, because when they do it ideally with the right weather, after the right kinds of rain, not during rain, the smoke lifts and moves, and then we don't have an issue, and there's no blowover back into the community. So with that, I'm over to you for any questions.
Any questions for the chief? Well, seeing none, I guess I have one once again. Just as Commander Nelson noted that there were far more calls for service, and you have said the same, but he said there was no cause for alarm. Should we be concerned that the fire department's responding to more incidents, and that's a gradual increase?
I don't think it's an element of concern. I think it is just an example of what's happening in this business. And what we need to be thinking about is, as we do these projections in the years to come, what kind of an impact does that have to the fire department and emergency personnel in being able to do all of the other projects that we are asked to participate in, which we're happy to do, but the more impact we have, the more draw we have for emergency calls, it does affect the other programs. So sometimes, quite frankly, that means there might be considerations for increases in expenditures or personnel, but those are all things to be figured out at that 10,000-foot level in reviewing the entire process of the CCST. So it's not a matter of concern. It's just something that we need to track so we could be able to provide the best level of service for the community.
All right, Chief. Well, thank you very much. Vice President Steidel.
Just a question of interest. How are things going as far as the fire station?
Fire station is moving along very well. Almost all of the administration and bedroom stuff is complete right now in regards to the repair.
Correct.
And the flooring is almost done. As soon as that's finalized, we're going to be moving back into the living space area, into the training and the EOC room. But almost the entire front portion of the station is complete. Just as a reminder, that's all being done by personnel that are on duty when they have time around all their other projects. But it is moving forward effectively, yes.
And please extend our thanks for their taking that task on and saving the district some
They are happy to do it. They're very prideful of that station. They want it to be look exactly the way it's supposed to, and they're doing an excellent job.
Thank you. I see that Director Howell also has his light on. Although, could you move your microphone up a little more so I could see it? Oh, it's not on. Well, there you are. All right, Chief. Well, it looks like that's it for the day.
Thank you. I do have one thing.
You bet.
I just wanted to, on what Director Steidel said. Can you hear me okay?
I can.
I happened to be out over at the fire department searching for our district for Haley. She was there. But I got a tour from some of the folks as to what was done. And I have to say, it was mind-boggling. Yeah. It was amazing. And the skills involved, which are not what they were trained to do, is pretty impressive from the drywalling and the putting in the floors. It's amazing. So, yeah, many thanks because you're really
We are benefiting from the fact that one of our full-time personnel is also a full-time licensed contractor. So he kind of is overseeing stuff. And every one of us has done extensive work on our own homes. So we're kind of using that experience in doing the repairs. But again, we're able to save quite a bit of money in the process. So it does make it last longer, but we will get it done.
Yeah, Chief, I was fortunate enough to be at the fire department, the fire station yesterday, and you gave us a brief tour, and things really, to use the naval metaphor, they look shipshape. So thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. Moving on to public comment, and for those of you who are here at the last episode of CCSD, we had a number of comment slips turned in, and so far it's a very light load, and only one for item number 3, public comment, and that would be Ms. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Is that the right button? Excellent. I don't know who you are, but thank you.
You don't know who that is?
No, I don't.
Mr. Ray D'Enzo, this is Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Oh, you're going to be introduced later by the general manager, too. That will reinforce my memory capacity, which is aging. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen. I live on Park Hill, and I walk to the beach a lot. But I got to thinking the other day, watching the 13-foot surf, that the community of Cambria leads and serves in a very important way in the Central Coast. I'd like you to start in your head right now naming the parks and preserves in and near our town along the Pacific Ocean. I'll start Central Street Pocket Park, Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, Shamel Park, Santa Rosa Creek Preserve, Lambton Cliffs County Park, Cliffside Reserve, Strawberry Canyon, Pocahontas Native Plant Garden, more than a dozen other parcels that are protected and conserved, Leffingwell Landing, Fern Canyon Preserve, Cambria State Marine Park, Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary, San Simeon Natural Preserve, and Washburn Campground. That's quite a bit, isn't it? Over 26. All of this is in cooperation. We Cambrians cooperate with local, county, state, and national organizations. Cambria Community Services, Center Street Park. Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. The Land Conservancy. County of San Luis Obispo Parks and Recreation. Hearst San Simeon State Park. California Coastal Commission. California Department of Parks and Recreation, and Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. I thank them and all the members of this community and the visitors who work daily to maintain and preserve this clear understanding of commonwealth, the natural world entrusted to us all. So many Cambrians also volunteer as docents of the elephant seals a little further away, rescuers for Marine Mammal Sanctuary, docents of San Simeon Cove, etc. My gratitude goes to everyone for actions that protect future generations by restoring ecological stability and non-wasteful use of nature's trust. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen, and for both acknowledgement and appreciation of what we have here in our community. Seeing no further requests to speak under public comment, we'll move forward to item number 4 and the manager's reports. And General Manager Weigold.
Good afternoon, Mr. President. First order of business, I do want to introduce Mr. Ray D'Enzo, our new utilities manager and district engineer. Ray, stand up and be so recognized. Ray comes from us from the county in public works and started with us on January 6th. It listed a number of meetings I participated in this month in my report. We're also making some solid progress on our business process efficiencies and improvements, specifically in contracts and agenda processes. That's converting over to electronic means as we've been continuing to archive all our records electronically as well. As of today, I've signed the IGA for PG&E, and we're in the process of setting a kickoff date and meeting with PG&E. We filled a water operator position this past month, and we still have two open wastewater collection system workers, and those are the two that are provided by our proposition initiative earlier last year, and we'll be working with the Vactor truck in the future. Lastly, thanks to Director Howell for getting over to the firehouse, and I'd like to encourage all the board members to feel free to visit the various facilities and see our folks do what they do on a daily basis. It's pretty impressive. That concludes my report, pending your questions.
Any questions, any comments from members of the board? Vice President Steidel.
I was curious regarding the item that was listed out on the water meter replacements. I know that there's been an ongoing effort to take a look at what would be the most viable way to approach that with the meter, you know, with the battery replacements or entire meter replacements and so forth. Are we any closer to a decision on that, since we're, I think, on an average losing basically a battery a day on those, and it's creating quite a manual process?
Yeah, I'll also allow Ray to comment on that.
Okay.
But in general, we're moving, making progress. It's more of an information gathering and meeting with a bunch of various vendors. The issue right now, the reason why I'm not in a hard-pressed motion to go fast, is we are transitioning billing systems, which may or may not be consistent or compatible with various meter systems. So what I'm hesitant to do is have two different meter systems, two different billing systems, and transition everything all at the same time. And we have the new, you know, accounting system coming in as we transition to that. So we're trying to make, you know, be as risk-free as we can. But each time we meet with another vendor, we learn about another technology out there that might be able to help us save money and be more efficient in the long run with how we read meters, take and execute billing. Ray, do you have anything additional to comment on that?
Yes, Ray D'Angelo, Utilities Manager. Yes, I was going to touch upon that in my report, but I think John summed it up well. We are looking at the different vendors that are presented to us. The challenge right now is getting an apples-to-apples comparison, because right now the system that we have is from a company called Badger, and they do have they did present to us an option, but it would require a lot more replacement that we would care to replace. Replacing brass assembly and all of that. We want to avoid that. The other thing too that we're looking forward to is. Right now, we're able to use what's called AMR technology, where we can read the meter just by driving by. But we want to make it forward-thinking into the future, maybe incorporate what's called AMI technology, which allows you to look at your meters through the internet, through a cloud-based kind of a system. And a lot of these systems now that we're looking at is able to do both now and into the future. But we're going to do a cost-benefit analysis within the next couple of months here. But in the meantime, we have to read about 367 meters manually. So, but I guess I don't have to mention that in my report. But anyway, thank you. Any other questions about that?
Doesn't appear to be. Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Ray. Moving on to the finance manager's report. Yes. Wow. There's only three requests to speak, and I still messed up. My apologies, Ms. Bettenhausen. Please step forward, Mystery Challenger.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm Elizabeth Bettenhausen. I woke up the other night at about 2 a.m., and I tried to figure out a method for you to keep your little pieces of paper straight there. And I was a complete and total failure. I did not succeed. So I wish you well in discerning a method with the cooperation of the Vice President in keeping these stacks straight. Maybe they could be different colors, like I do with the books. I wish you well. I look forward to the correction on the CCSD website concerning standing committees and ad hoc committees. If you go to the CCSD website, there's no mention of standing committees, and there are ad hoc committees undefined. All of the committees are not accurately labeled. None of them is accurately labeled. And no description is given for the differences among the ad hoc committees of the Board of Directors, the standing committees of the Board of Directors, and the ad hoc committees within a standing committee. It's really confusing. But I assure you, I wrote to the general manager last week, and he wrote back to me and said that they hope, given the holiday and the workload they had last Friday, they hope to get back to me this week with a list of all the ad hoc committees and standing committees of the CCSD. And I would be more than happy to receive that in a digital version, because I think we should be not cutting down several hundred trees in order to communicate with the public, but rather we can just do it digitally and pay for the carbon footprint of the electricity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen, for bringing that to our attention, and I'm sure staff will be attending to your observations and concerns ASAP. Now, moving forward to the Finance Manager's Report, and Ms. Duffield.
Thank you, President Farmer. So I just want to add one quick item to the information you have in front of you. Since this report was written, I do have an update in regards to the fiscal year 17-18 audit. Yesterday, I did receive the draft audit report from Mr. Bruner. So over the next couple of weeks, I will be reviewing that and discussing anything of interest with Mr. Bruner. And then we will get that item on the Finance Committee's agenda and on the Board's agenda in February. It looks like with the Finance Committee's agenda, they don't meet until February 25th. So, and our Board meetings in February are the 13th and the 20th. So we might need to have a special Finance Committee meeting to review that in advance of the board seeing it, because I know Finance really would like a chance to review it before it comes to the board. So we will get those details worked out, and just so you're aware, we will see that in February.
Thank you. I know I had made a request of you regarding the cost of the facility for this past year. Oh, I don't think Ms. Duffield knows I'm talking to her. Thank you. I believe I had made a request of you to perhaps provide the cost of the our water facility for this past fiscal year. Were you able to get that information or not? We discussed that about a week ago or so.
I'm working with Finance on that.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. All right. Moving forward.
Just yes. Out of curiosity, when you say the cost of the facility, mm-hmm. what do you
The emergency water facility.
Right. What is your expectation of what's entailed in those costs?
Oh, when you say my expectation that's entailed, what do you mean? Well, let me just say this much. The figures from the monthly expenditure report and see what they add up to at the end of the year. I hope that's a satisfactory answer.
Oh, it's fine. I just didn't know if you were expecting to have labor costs associated with operators, if you were expecting... I mean,
It is very broad-based. And in fact, we probably don't get a complete assessment of the cost because salaries aren't necessarily included, salaries of staff. This is just more what's, like I say, in the expenditure report. So... It may not be totally accurate, which indicates that it's probably more if you include staff time.
Well, that'd be the case for any element of the district. That's true. It was just that I was just asking the question to understand what your expectation was, so that it would be something that came back to you and what you were looking to find out.
If I could just elaborate, anyone that's read Don Miguel Ruiz and the Four Agreements. I've added a fifth one, which is there's four of them, one including make no assumptions. I make the fifth one, have no expectations. So there we are. I don't have any expectations. Thank you.
President Farmer.
Yes.
Sorry, if I just may add a little comment.
Sure.
So this information is published. You can see the past 2 years, maybe 3 years, if you do look at the final budget report. So when the board adopted the budget for fiscal year 19-20, it did have a comparative cost of what has actually happened in revenue and expenditures in each one of the funds. So if you look back to those documents or you want me to provide that document to you again, it has already been added up. It is not by calendar year. It is right. By fiscal year. But right. The costs are in the budget documents.
Okay. Well, thank you. Moving forward to... Moving forward to item 4C... which, oddly enough, is the utilities report. And we have, believe it or not, two requests to speak. Oh. So, Mr. D'Enzo, before you express yourself with passion and a fund of information, we'll let two people from the community speak. And the first person is Christine Heinrich.
Good afternoon. Thank you. The utilities report includes the notice that on December 30th, staff released a request for qualifications and proposals for the 2020 Water Resources Team. The solicitation will assist staff and the members of the CDP and Urban Water Management Plan ad hoc committees in selecting a consultant team to prepare the 2020 UWMP and provide technical assistance for the regular coastal development permit application for the sustainable water facility. Hiring this team will be expensive, yet another cost to the emergency water supply project, and time-consuming, kicking the incomplete coastal development permit application another year or two down the road. It's now almost 5 years overdue. In response to the RFW-RFP, the Coastal Commission's senior environmental scientist, Tom Luster, has informed you in an email, President Farmer, Director Pearson, General Manager Weigold, and others, that this RFQ-RFP will not answer the questions needed to approve the Emergency Water Supply Project Coastal Development Permit. He said, the district still needs to provide an adequate in-stream flow study. We've been waiting for this study for a number of years, but the tasks listed in the RFQ-RFP don't include any such study. The RFQ-RFP doesn't address conformity with the LCP's ESHA provisions. As we've discussed, the project site appears to consist almost entirely of environmentally sensitive habitat area, which means project components need to be relocated unless determined by the county or by the Commission on Appeal that it is infeasible for them to be located elsewhere in non-ESHA areas. And if they remain within ESHA, the CCSD would have to do extensive ESHA restoration nearby. The LCP also has several other ESHA-related provisions applicable to the proposed project. Development is required to allow biological continuance of the habitat, to be located certain distances from various habitat areas, including streams and wetlands, etc., review of which will also rely on an acceptable in-stream flow study. The RFQ-RFP does not appear to address these issues. Without additional information on these issue areas, the work proposed under the RFQ-RFP to develop the CDP and the UWMP will likely be of limited use for purposes of the Coastal Commission's review. I hope you have discussed these deficiencies with the Resources and Infrastructure Committee and will direct staff to rewrite this RFQ-RFP as appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for ending right on time, Ms. Heinrichs. We have another request to speak on this item, and that would be Ms. Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'd like you please to turn to page 31 of your agenda, or scroll to it, whichever is your option. And I want to read part of what it says there. Quote, conservation staff are in the preliminary phase of designing and building a new database to track and analyze retrofit and conservation data. The retrofit inspection process and form are also undergoing improvements to ensure accurate and transparent data collection and transfer to the new database, end of quotation. I have three questions about that. One, what kind of data are, quote, conservation data, end quote? Two, who are the conservation staff? And three, what is the new database referred to in this paragraph? And as you can imagine, I passionately hope it is not Tyler ENCODE, because that would simply delay the whole process again. My second point, as you know from my bi-monthly CCSD billing summary data analysis, the gallons per capita daily for residential use in Cambria has been below 50 gallons per capita daily since 2013. It's mentioned on page 31, as you see, as the aspiration to the state standard. In 2018, the residential gallons per capita daily use was 43.7 gallons. However, when the standard is set by the state of California, it often means the gallons per capita daily of total usage, residential and commercial, divided then by the number of full-time residents of the town. That usage number is obviously higher. For example, in 2018 for Cambria, it was 69.3 gallons per person daily. So the conservation usage by the residents in Cambria is much better than the conservation when the commercial usage is included. I'm not asking you, Board, to petition the state of California to get clarity on what they really want and why. That's not my goal. My goal is that you start paying attention explicitly in your deliberations about many issues to the difference between usage and conservation among residents and among the commercial aspects of Cambria. As you know, the commercial aspect already uses more than a third of the water pumped from our wells. So it's a significant amount of the water that's used is for commercial purposes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Any members of staff or anyone on the board wish to comment? Seeing no further comments, Mr. D'Anzo, thank you.
Good afternoon, President Farmer and the board. I'm Ray D'Anzo, Utilities Manager, and I'm pleased to present my inaugural utilities report for the month of December 2019. This report shows the responsiveness of our great staff, and I'm glad to be joining a team who's very professionally and conscientiously devoted to their work. So to begin, I would like to introduce a member of our water team, Arthur Gurney. He's not here today, but if you see him around town, you know, go ahead and say hello. Art was born and raised here in Cambria, and his recent work was in South Lake Tahoe, working in the meter exchange program. But he's now come back home. Art holds his water treatment T2 and water distribution D2 certifications, so we want to welcome him. So if you see him around town, feel free to give him a welcome, as you've welcomed me. So, and other things to summarize regarding the wastewater plant, we, as you all saw a couple weeks ago, we got a new Vactor truck. But from the report, as you can see, the truck arrived to us serendipitously. It arrived to us December 23rd, and on December 24th, we were able to use it in an emergency repair, because the grit chamber bypass valve broke, and we were able to use the excavator function of the Vactor truck to be able to fix it quickly and without much, you know, disturbance to the area around it. And if you see where this valve is located, you'll understand that it saved us a lot of money. And the Vactor truck pretty much paid for itself that first month within 48 hours. So that's, I want to give kudos to the truck. It's upstaged me again. So anyway. And right around the same time, as also mentioned in the report, just to give some highlights, we, you know, if you remember, it rained a lot right around that time before and afterwards. And the significance of fixing the clarifier skimmer rails that fell off the rails, literally, they were able to fix that, and again, responsive work by our team got it replaced quickly and, you know, in times before the next rains came. Also to note just a couple of things, we got a new Tier 4 generator for our lift station there in LS lift station B2, and also efforts in our collection system in general. Where our main focus has been to locate all the manholes and bring them up to grade and enter it into our database management system, which is cloud-based. The significance of this is we're tracking all of this information so that we could retrieve reports that's consistent with our sanitary sewer management plan. Moving on to some of the water highlights, we finished installation of some of the backup generator for our San Simeon well field. Some ducking needed to be done based on some requirements by the APCD. So we were able to get that completed. Also wanted to let you know, as mentioned in the report, is that we do have monthly maintenance on those generators as well. Other highlights, we have equipment calibration. We normally do those monthly, but we also have every 2 to 3 months, we have it professionally. We hire a professional contractor called Hawk that does the calibration for, of all of the equipment, the analysis equipment. So I already mentioned some of the details on the meter replacement, so I think we'll leave that for now. And also in the report, the well levels and charts are also there. As you can see, for 2019, we used a total of 530 acre feet. 77% of this water came from the San Simeon well field. And I just want also to note that water use has gone down again from last year, about 5.4 acre feet from last year. And it's, you know, gone down steadily even from the year prior to that. So I wanted to make mention of that. One note on the SWF, the Sustainable Water Facility, on December 13th, we attended the Regional Water Quality Control Board, where we officially closed the Title 27 permit for the impoundment basin. The significance of this is that we no longer need to pay permitting fees for that, or monitoring fees as well. Some other things regarding the note, the comment on the RFP, RFQ for the Urban Water Management Plan and the CDP permit effort. Although it's not explicitly stated that we need an in-stream flow study, it is indirectly stated there that reports, like further technical reports, will be discussed with Coastal when we hire a contractor or when we hire a consultant to do that. I know that our bibliography in that RFP also mentions some preliminary studies that were done in the past. But this will just be a foundation because Coastal wants a more robust in-stream flow study. So we will be addressing that with the Coastal Commission once we have a consultant on board. Some other things of note: regulatory permits were submitted on time, and no issues or concerns were noted in any of those reports. And also, there's a little discussion there about SB 555, AB 1668, and SB 606. Just a note on SB 555, this is in development right now by the state. They want to keep in mind that that there are going to be some small communities. They want to make it feasible so that any regulations that they impose is not going to be too financially constraining for small communities such as ours. But the discussion is there. But that's my summary of the utilities report, and I'm available for questions.
Any members of the board have any questions for our utilities manager, Mr. DeAnzo? Director Howell.
This is just for my own enlightenment. An in-stream flow study, is that where we try to determine what effect our pumping has upon the streams, or could you just expand a little for my ignorant self as to what that study would entail?
Yeah, typically, that's exactly it. They want to know, in a nutshell, the relationship between groundwater and surface water relationship. That's, in a nutshell, what it would be.
Mr. DeAnzo, I want to thank you for that full report, as well as addressing Ms. Heinrich's concerns. So I just want to ask you one question, and we happen to have the report right here, so in some ways members of the board have this information, but could you just kind of update us on the well levels at both San Simeon and Santa Rosa Creeks, just to know if they're a little bit higher than average, considering the early rains that we had, is that possible?
Yeah, actually, so I think I have that information here. The Currently, the as of January 17, 2020, the well level in Santa Rosa, I have the level for Santa Rosa, is at 9.56 feet. Our permit says that we cannot pump if it goes down to 3 or lower. So we're well above that as of January 17th, which, you know, that reflects a lot of the rains that
right.
that we got recently. So I don't have current data on San Simeon, though, not in front of me, though.
Okay. Oh, that's fine. Because I think most members of the community know that the largest amount of water that we use here in the community is from San Simeon Creek. Mm-hmm. So when you can you know, bring us those figures, that would be fine.
Sure.
Just for the knowledge of the community.
Okay.
And also one more thing, you mentioned that the Vactor truck upstaged you. I think you said that comment. So all I can say is you're doing an excellent job for having been here for 3 weeks and just to keep on trucking. Oh, 2 weeks. So just keep on trucking like a doodah man, and I think everything's going to be okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's from a Grateful Dead song, in case anybody's wondering. Where'd you come up with that? Yeah, so moving on to item number 5, board member committee and liaison reports. And it appears that the first report is going to be from yours truly. Let me preface what I'm about to say with the fact that we have a fairly brief agenda today. And I think all of us, and we're hoping, anticipating that this would be as short a meeting as possible. So if anything is going to lengthen it, I just want to caution you, it's going to be my president's report. So feel free to go out for coffee or whatever, or just stick around, and this shouldn't take too long. And let me also preface this by saying that this is the first president's report of this year, the first president's report of this decade. Just to put it in context. So to begin with, and I'm reading this and trying to keep as positive an eye contact as I can. So to begin with, I wish to reference some of the comments and suggestions that were made at last week's board meeting. You know, a number of folks, both in public comment as well as members of the board, remarked as to the importance of being responsible stewards of the natural environment in which our community exists, and that encouraging this attitude and outlook will enhance the overall well-being of this town that we call home. In addition, Vice President Steidel accurately observed that often board and staff in the past have been more reactive than anything else, and that we, as a board, as a district, need to become more proactive in our planning and decision-making moving forward. So I want to thank her for that comment. That being said, I feel the need to remind all of us that decisions made and actions taken in the past decade by board and district staff, at times based on misleading or inaccurate information and statements, or sadly, due to basic incompetence, has not only affected the past, current, and even the future financial circumstances of the district, and therefore the ratepayers of our community, but has negatively impacted the natural environment and sensitive habitat areas. Thankfully, through infrastructure needs of wastewater department, though infrastructure needs of the wastewater department were also ignored in the past, due to the initiative of Chief Plan Officer John Alchin and his staff, we will be soon partnering with PG&E in the coming years to make major upgrades and improvements to both the sewer plant and the collection system, ultimately allowing the plant to run more efficiently while lowering the cost of operating the plant as well. In addition, the need for improvements regarding water storage and delivery, as well as improved tracking of water usage, will make the district more structurally and economically sound in addressing the most important obligations and responsibilities of our CCSD, providing for the water and sewer needs of the residents and businesses of our community. Having said this, I wish to make some suggestions as to how Cambria can become a more sustainable, water-wise, and efficient community moving forward. In centuries past, both advanced civilizations and societies, as well as indigenous peoples living on the land, took advantage of opportunities such as stormwater capture and storage for use in drier periods of the year. Plus, when available, wetlands were used ultimately to turn human waste back into useful, even potable drinking water. Needless to say, these time-tested technologies are still being used in many parts of the world, including the west coast of the United States. In a recent conversation that I shared with our new utilities manager, Mr. Ray D'Enzo, who appears to have joined Elvis and has left the building, he stated that he was quite agreeable in investigating these options for Cambria in the near future. So I'd like to suggest that at some point in this coming year, that our Resources and Infrastructure Committee, headed by our former president of the board, David Pearson, investigate opportunities that exist within our area for water storage, use, and reuse, that the cost of so be determined, and that this information be forwarded to the Finance Committee to address potential funding in the district budget. Also, at some point in the year, in the coming year, the district should advertise for a volunteer, or if not successful in that area, maybe an employee from our community or elsewhere to be a grant writer to assist in obtaining funding for needed projects. There are various state agencies that look quite favorably upon creative communities that are forward-looking regarding water and wastewater solutions and are willing to provide financial assistance for projects and opportunities that become available. Thanks to the initiative of former Board President David Pearson and Presidents Sam Shalhoub and Barbara Bronson Gray of the school district and healthcare districts, a report is being sent out every other billing period to inform the community as to the actions and accomplishments of the three districts. Also soon to be included will be updates on how rate increase monies, which of course have been of a concern of most all the residents of our town, how the rate increase monies are being wisely spent by the board and staff. I'd like to also take a page from General Manager Weigel's playbook with regard to the board and district developing a strategic plan regarding goals and objectives and a vision for our town moving forward into the coming year and decade. To me, furthering an attitude of trust and appreciation between the board, the district, and the residents of Cambria needs to be a top priority. Promoting the positive actions and responsible decision-making of the recent past and moving forward can hopefully generate greater enthusiasm and public participation, especially in the upcoming town hall meetings where the district and members of the community will have a voice in creating a more enlightened vision for the future of Cambria. I'd like to acknowledge the residents of our community who, in letters to the editor, in the Cambria newspaper, in comments on social media, and of course in public comment at our board and standing committee meetings, who offer both constructive criticism as well as forward-looking ideas and solutions. Hopefully developing a more agreeable and harmonious relationship between the board, the district, and active members of our community will encourage more Cambrians to become involved in addressing the needs of our town, providing creative ideas that will make our town an even more vibrant community. And somewhere I seem to have skipped over the fact that this will hopefully encourage more folks to show up at the upcoming town halls that we'll be announcing soon, and there'll be greater and more, how could we say it, more informative participation with regard to all members of the community. Finally, I wish to make this concluding observation. Never in the history of humanity have we been faced with greater challenges and opportunity as to how we're living on planet Earth, our only home. You and I are obviously blessed to be living in this very special place known as Cambria. We are therefore obligated to be even more responsible in how we live our day-to-day lives. Creating more harmony and understanding within ourselves and our relationships, generating an even greater spirit of generosity and appreciation of one another in our neighborhoods, and acknowledging the absolute need to live in harmony with nature, whose gifts and beauty that surrounds us, nourishes our body, soul, and spirit, should be an ideal that we all strive to achieve as we move forward into the coming decade. Thank you. Moving forward into the Finance Committee's report, and Vice President Steidel.
I believe that the single most significant item of the Finance Manager's report would be to acknowledge the fact that we have received the draft audit report from our auditor, and Ms. Duffield earlier basically outlined the process that we'll go forward with to be able to bring that audit report to the board. Although she has not yet had an opportunity, having just received it close of business yesterday, to determine all of the ins and outs of what it might be, its development has been significant in that it cleaned the process for obtaining or working to the end product of this audit report has been to create a much stronger financial system within the district, and to rectify some things that needed to be addressed, and have better controls, financial controls in place for the staff to be able to follow. Ms. Duffield has been instrumental in making that happen, and I thank her very much for that, and looking forward to seeing the audit report. I imagine there will be some things that will address a number of the items that she and the staff have been working toward over the last year in getting better financial alignments within the district. But by the same token, I'm not expecting, nor had I heard of anything that was going to be a major action or address for us. So looking forward to the report. Thank you, and we'll be probably having a special meeting of the Finance Committee to be able to take a look at that information and then work it to either the first or second board meeting as it, however it plays out. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of the chair of the Finance Committee? Yes, Director Howe.
Again, just informational. Could you remind me, please, when the new budget cycle starts?
Well, it's going to be it's going to be relatively soon. Have you laid any initial planning out for?
No, we'll probably start sometime in March. We have the quarterly report to complete and some other significant things going on in finance, like audits. So we will get that on the calendar, but it will be soon, not imminent, but it'll be soon.
And I'll add an aside to that, too, that I think that our process with the budget this go-around will be much more I don't want to say easier. I'm just saying it will be more specific in the mechanisms that are put in place for developing the information, delivering the information, because the actual format of all of the budget data had to be completely revamped for last year, and that was a significant amount of effort. And I think the format that we have now in providing the visibility into the 218 rate in budgetary information and the allocation of budget against items for the CIP, all of that gives us more visibility, and all of that structure now is in place. So I think things will move more easily through staff as well as the Infrastructure Committee and Finance Committee.
Well, let me just make this comment that I think we can all be thankful for the work that's being done by the Finance Committee and the well-informed members of that Finance Committee, as well as our finance officer, for things being, how could we say it, being done much more efficiently and effectively. So thank you. Moving on to the Policy Committee and Director Donhell.
Oh, thank you. For our next meeting, which actually occurs next week, it's our regular meeting for January, we will commence reviewing our bylaws, or the general, our part of the bylaws. Essentially, an area that I'm feeling that we need to re-examine anyway. And this is, of course, remembering that this will come before the board once we've gone over it. But I'm concerned about our mission and our goals, and I'm beginning to think, and I'm hoping that we will have this discussion next week. I think the committee is probably needing to refocus its efforts in a slightly different way. I don't want to reveal all my thoughts at once here, but one of the problems that we've been having is that, aside from the fact that, sometimes the committee brings forward something to the board, and then the board, for its own very good reasons, may reject that. Well, that's probably not the best way that we could, because what that does, I mean, and it's not the board's fault, please understand me, but I think maybe the committee, in what it presents to the board, may need to frame things somewhat differently as perhaps a series of alternatives or concerns, so that they won't, instead of just having something rejected out of hand and they begin to feel like, hey, why are we doing this, that there will be some, trying to work some way that we can get some process of back and forth going, and perhaps have that committee get a little more feelings of satisfaction as we go forward. I have to say that I haven't been on the Finance Committee yet. I've avoided having to do that. But I have to say, infrastructure, it can be exciting and interesting. Policy can be a little bit different, as I think I've mentioned before, and in some respects, it takes a lot of hard work, and sometimes rather, I won't say boring, but a lot of hard work, much research, much interaction with staff and public, perhaps, contact with other communities to see what they're doing. There's a lot of research and a lot of writing that needs to go forward. So this committee, they're going to be doing a lot of hard work. And so I'm going to try to see if we can't work a framework that will give them some satisfaction and keep them as they're doing this work. So I just wanted to kind of give the board a little bit of a heads up on that. And I invite any kind of comments, either now or later, or individually or whatever, as to any suggestions that you might want me to bring forward to the committee that we can turn around and consider, as to how we do our work. So that's the one area. As I mentioned, the mission statement and the bylaws. We do have some ongoing efforts right now working on purchasing issues. And the board has asked us to go back and revisit the homeless in that situation. We have a huge laundry list of stuff that even committee members are interested in and things that other board members have suggested. I don't know if we'll ever get to them, but I'm not going to burden you right now with that. At some point in the future, I hope to be able to give you and the committee a summary of what's been done so far and what state everything is in, because there's various levels. Once we have that, that may help us, I think, as we try to move forward on that. So I could go on and on. The other issue, which is coming up, is that we do have our vacancy, which we are hoping to fill, if we hope to fill it this time around. Because I really want to share this work out as much as possible. So the more bodies that I can get working on it, I'm happier, and I think the committee's happier too. But that will come up in a moment. Anyway, so that's all. But I'm open to any suggestions whenever the president regards it as in order.
Well, you reflected on the state of the committee, so hopefully it's more of a state of enthusiasm than anything else, right? Thank you. Vice President Steidel.
I feel that the policy committee really has a difficult hurdle because where the infrastructure committee or the finance committee have very specific, tangible, more tangible, I would say, items that they can focus on and bring forward, and that helps actually establish those committees with certain kind of skill sets. And I think the skill sets for the policy committee almost require a real diversity because you almost need to have someone who's a technical writer, someone who's familiar with organizational structures, it makes it very difficult to have all of those unusual skill sets available within one community. So I acknowledge the challenge that you and the committee have ahead of you, and thank you for the efforts that you're making towards it.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Director Pearson, you have a report from the Resources and Infrastructure Committee?
Yes, and I'm going to yield the floor to the Vice Chair, Ms. Dean.
Welcome, Ms. Karen Dean.
Thank you. Good afternoon. The Infrastructure Committee met on Tuesday, January 14th. All of our committee members were present. Staff members present were Ray D'Enzo, our new Utilities Manager, our Finance Manager, Pam Duffield, General Manager John Weigold, and Melissa Bland, Management Analyst. We also had 5 members of the public in the audience, which was good. The Urban Water Management Plan Ad Hoc Committee reported that they have not met since December, but we are anticipating to begin meeting again once responses to the RFQ-RFP for the Urban Water Management Plan and the CDP come in. The RFQ-RFP was posted online the end of December. Additional requests were also sent directly to, I believe, about 60 consultant firms. As of our R&I meeting last week, no responses had yet been received. I don't know if that's changed or not. There is a brief discussion on how the Urban Water Management Plan CDP were related, since both were included in the search for a consultant. And it was noted that some of the same research and data that's needed for the CDP is also needed for the Urban Water Management Plan. We had discussion and consideration for the appointment of vice chair and secretary, and we reappointed Tom Gray as secretary and myself as vice chair. We discussed and established a 2020 meeting schedule, and our R&I meetings will be the second Monday of each month at 2 p.m., with the exception of June and September, which will be the third Monday due to some other committee member commitments. We had a discussion of needed capital improvement budget allocations due to a couple of emergency repairs, a pump replacement in the water department and a pump failure and replacement in the wastewater department. The committee approved the staff recommendations for the reallocations of funds and voted to forward the recommendations to the Finance Committee. We discussed the appointments to our ad hoc committees. Tom Gray and Karen Dean will remain on the Urban Water Management Plan Ad Hoc Committee. Paul Nugent has stepped down from the committee and is replaced with our chair, David Pearson. Other possible committees discussed were a committee to assist the staff with research on upgrading the water meters, and a committee to research grant opportunities to fund work recommended by PG&E and other CIP projects. Our new utilities manager has already been working on the water meter research, as he explained earlier. He He also said that he had some inside leads for grant opportunities, so R and I will hold off on those ad hoc committees until the staff requests our assistance. We discussed methods on how to improve the communication with the community on the work being done on the on CIPs with their Prop 218 rates. We came up and discussed several ideas, among them using different color to highlight projects completed or in progress and posting those charts quarterly on the walls again in the CCSD meetings, or an insert periodically into the utilities bill, an update at monthly meeting utilities reports, or a sign showing your Prop 218 funds at work and posting on it the projects done. We're still discussing this, and it'll probably be a future agenda item. And that's all I have for now. Thank you.
Any comments or questions from members of the board? Yes, Director Pearson.
I'd just like to, one, try to get an update from the general manager. Have we received any responses to our RFP, RFQ to date that you're aware of?
We have one response requesting a meeting to date.
And that's it? Okay. Have you made the decision yet whether to extend the allotted time?
We're extending it 2 weeks.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
It seems, I was just going to say, it seems as if the R&I committee has been very active in this first month of the year. So thank you.
Yeah, the other thing, since you brought it up, does the board want to discuss at this time the president and his message talked about charging the R&I committee with looking into off-site storage possibilities. Is that something that the board wants us to do?
Well, I see a nod of the head from our vice president, so yes, Ms. Tidell.
No, I think that would be a valuable piece of information to have in terms of things that either, you know, obviously that people can do as individual community members, but also if we have some kinds of practical ways in which the community district has an opportunity to do that and the service that it would provide by having off or having the capture of water.
Thank you. Director Howell.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree on this. I think maybe it would be appropriate to make a motion to pass this on to the infrastructure. Is that not? Okay, we won't do that. But yes, please do.
Okay, we'll put that on the agenda for the next time, is to have start a discussion at least on in that area.
Cool.
Okay.
We saw a nod of the head there from legal counsel, and that was due to I'm at a loss for words. Just for the edification, if that's the correct word, of those of us in attendance here and those who will be watching.
Yes, this is agendized simply as reports, so it's not an action item. But certainly direction is a part of the reports.
Thank you. And moving on to other liaison reports. So, Director Pearson, you have a report from the North Coast Advisory Council?
Actually, I have four reports.
Well, I was going to do them one at a time.
Okay.
So I know you also have Fire Safe Focus Group. So just move on in alphabetical order or whatever order is convenient for you.
Okay. Thank Appreciate you. That. Appreciate that. I'm going to start with the regular coastal development permit ad hoc committee report. To add a little bit to what Mr. D'Annunzio said, we do have a hydrologist under contract at this time, and we also have a biologist under contract at this time. And these have been ongoing for quite some time because we've been using the biologist to do reports on what's going on and under the AMP and that kind of thing. So the RFP, RFQ does not specifically address those areas because we've already got those people on board and we plan to keep them because they have already got knowledge way down the road. We are going to meet with the county, hopefully later this month, and then after that, sometime in February, we'll be meeting with the Coastal Commission people to try to ascertain exactly what the inflow study they want to be done so that we have that coordinated before we go forward much farther. We continue to work with the county to finish the application, and at the same time, we are keeping the Coastal Commission aware. The general manager is exchanging emails with the Coastal Commission on almost a weekly basis. So I think we're moving along on that, and we don't think that the hiring of a consultant to work on both this and the Urban Water Master Plan will delay our getting in front of the county and further in front of the Coastal Commission. We still are trying to target getting in front of the county by mid-year. So that's my report on the CDP ad hoc committee. The NCAC meeting, couple of items of interest. One is that the homeless in town have been breaking into some of the buildings, especially here at Pine Dorado, and it's probably to get out of the weather and that kind of thing. And they've also been trespassing in other areas more than usual, and so the sheriff was made aware of those things. Supervisor Gibson gave a report on their meeting where the Chevron property along the Cayucos to Morro Bay Strand has been purchased by the county and will now be parkland. As you drive south on the left-hand side, all of that big hill, that big green hill, is now county property and will be turned into a park. And the area along the beach that used to belong to Chevron now belongs to Morro Bay as part of their park along the Strand. So the whole Strand now is park area instead of some of it being actually private area. E-cigarette paraphernalia have been outlawed for sale in Slo County. Not the cigarettes themselves, but the paraphernalia. Okay, yeah, that's what I said. Sure, that'll stop them. A hearing on new ADU codes, this is important. The hearing on new ADU codes will be held on the 28th as part of their regular meeting. It's going to be in the afternoon. I got the agenda this morning and looked at it. The hearing will be in the afternoon. I believe all the documentation is now out on their website, so if you want to go out and look at what changes they're thinking of making, they're pretty significant. The one thing that Supervisor Gibson did say is that the changes affecting the coastal area will need to be reviewed by the Coastal Commission, and that the CSDs, including us, will have some say on new water use. So that's still to be determined and stuff, but I want everybody to be aware that hearing on the changes that the county is making in response to the new state law, okay, will be on the 28th, which is next week. There was also a report on the film festival, which is February 6th through 9th. Very impressive. And a report on work being done on the Moonstone Drive area boardwalk. State Parks was contacted, and they have done some significant work on repairing the boardwalk and also cutting back the vegetation along the boardwalk so you can actually walk on the boardwalk. Very good reports all. That was the basic part of the NCAC meeting. If there are any questions or comments on NCAC. Next is the Fire Safe Focus Group meeting. Our meeting in January started with a review of the evacuation study done by Cal Poly Professor Dr. Neroso. Then Blake Fixler, who is the administrative aide to Supervisor Gibson and was very instrumental in getting this meeting done, introduced the head of the County Office of Emergency Services, Joe Gazzardi. and Mr. Gazzardi led a discussion on using Highway 1 as a two-lane evacuation route. The CHP, the Sheriff's Office, and Caltrans were all represented. Our fire department, to give you an idea of what will happen, this is just in brief, if you missed the meeting, our fire department will decide when and who should evacuate in case of a fire. The Sheriff's Office will be the people that will spread the word, either door-to-door or with loudspeakers on their vehicles. The CHP will try to use the highway to speed evacuations using Caltrans to assist. They all, the Sheriff, CHP, and Caltrans, all made it very clear that their assets are very limited. For instance, CHP at any one time in the north part of the county only has 5 officers on duty. So if we had a need to evacuate and they were notified, he'd have somebody here pretty quickly because there's somebody in our area pretty much. But getting the other 4 assets here would take anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes, okay, depending upon where they were in the north part of the county. The sheriff was basically in the same situation. He's got one guy that pretty much is here most of the time, but getting the rest of the people here to help with the evacuation order, et cetera, would take time. Caltrans says that they have cones and signs and stuff right up the road here at Route 41, but getting the assets to get that to back here to in order to set those up and do that would take some time. So they will do what they can as fast as they can. They all have plans in place, but will work on refining those with our help and the use of Cal Poly studies. They stress to all of us in Cambria, all of us in the San Simeon area, need to be prepared, have your stuff ready to go, and have not just plan A, but you should also have a plan B. In other words, if the evacuation route that you plan A is blocked, you need to have a plan B as to where you're going to go instead. Okay? So they stretch that. They do plan on getting together and revising their plans and coming back to us at some point, hopefully in May at our preparedness day, and give us an update as to what they think they can do. It was a great meeting, though. It all went really, really well. We had about 75 people there. Okay? Alert system, we have a small subcommittee that is working on an alert system that will include signs and flashing lights and a radio station to alert people as to where to go, and I'll be able to give a better update on that next month. Our next challenge at the Fire Safe Focus Group is insurance. We're going to tackle that, go find insurance companies and find out why they're canceling or not renewing, and we're going to go forward and try to get some resolution to that. So that's our next challenge. And that's the completion of my report. The Strategic Planning Ad Hoc Committee, which was formed just a week ago, we have not had a meeting yet, but we will be having a meeting next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Pearson, for unbelievably thorough report, thorough and authoritative report. Thank you so much. So considering other liaison and ad hoc committee reports, yes, Vice President Steidel.
Well, myself and Director Howell have been working with staff, with district staff, on the affordable housing ad hoc. It has brought to realization that probably there are elements of the district code that we need to address and separate different types of information related to housing. With the affordable housing, because our processes, potential processes, will be somewhat different, same end product, but somewhat different getting there. Between that and, for instance, the residential wait list, which is something that evolved over a decade and has a different flavor to it, I'll say, than a wait list that would be associated with affordable housing, as well as different kinds of projects that would be associated with it, where you're not just dealing with a single family residence. You might be dealing with more of a project or a self-help group that's intending to put in a larger project, as we have had some experience with information coming forward with that. So we've been working together to try to define what the processes would be and to define what the process flow would be for them. And we've spent a great deal of time kind of teasing that out. I likened it to having a gold chain that you've had in your jewelry box for too long that's knotted in 12 different places, and you're trying to take a pin to it and to tease all the little bits and pieces out. And so Director Howell and I have put a great deal of effort into reviewing those things and forming information back and forth. We have a meeting with Melissa Bland tomorrow, and we'll be discussing between the three of us the information that we've developed so far. And when we get to the point of being able to bring something forward that we'd like to make a recommendation to the board with, we'll be doing that, but we'll probably be working on it a little bit longer to get there. Is there anything that you have to add?
I think you covered it very well. Okay. Thank you. I do have a question for Mr. Carmel, which is kind of germane, since we spoke of the code. Two questions. How long does it normally take for an ordinance to be codified? Do we have any knowledge of this? And the second question, then you might answer both at once maybe, is how much can we rely upon the code as being the current law? That is to say, or do we have to also check the ordinances to be sure that everything comports?
I'm not sure I understand the second question.
Well, try the first one.
Codifying shouldn't take very long, not more than a month or so to get it online.
So the chances are, if we're looking at the code, that is the current, that is the state of affairs.
Yes.
That's what mainly I wanted to be sure should we be looking at the original ordinances as well? Would you do?
The ordinances are ultimately codified.
That's
how it works. So as soon as you pass it, it's law, but in order for it to get in the book itself, there's some processing involved.
So I guess what I'm saying is we don't need to do any additional work by going back to the ordinances. We can rely on the code. Does that make sense?
Well, you're going to be amending the code. That's basically what you're talking about here.
Yeah,
through
yeah.
ordinances.
Okay. Just didn't want to make sure we were discussing something that was real as opposed to had there been a delay, say a three-month delay or something, or I don't know how long that organization takes to
Well,
codify.
Again, it becomes law as soon as you adopt mm-hmm. it and wait your 30 days. But to actually get it in the code itself may take a little bit of time. The code service we use would post it online fairly quickly, I mm-hmm. believe.
Final and last. Is it a matter of concern to determine whether a law or a statute has been correct, or an ordinance in our case? Do we need to be worried about whether it has been correctly codified? Have there been times when the codifying organization has not properly done what they needed to do?
They make mistakes.
They do make mistakes.
We certainly have to carefully review it before it's final.
Ah, okay. That's enough information for now. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you. So it appears right now that I'll be giving one report, and that is from the Cambria Forest Committee. And usually the Schwartzes, Crosby and Laura Schwartz, who attend basically every board meeting, and they might be out of town, and that's why they're not here today, because it's Wednesday instead of Thursday. So I'll go on with the report from the Forest Committee. And it was a rather lively meeting in that we had 16 people in attendance, and that included Alan Peters, who is the forester for CAL FIRE, as well as Mr. Jim Newman from CAL FIRE, as well as Dan Turner, who is the business manager for the County Fire Safe Council. I'd like to make a couple of comments. And, of course, as has been a main topic of discussion in recent months at the Forest Committee is with regard to the work that was done on the Fiscalini Ranch and the removal of the understory, which I think probably not as controversial an issue as it was when it first took place, but still it's something that people are concerned about and feel like a further explanation is needed. Anyway, so with regard to Mr. Alan Peters, he briefly addressed this fuel reduction that took place on the ranch. And he said that dead and dying trees basically need to be removed. It's kind of an executive order from the governor, and so it's something that needs to take place. Something that was of an interest to me was the fact that he discussed the fact that Olaleberry and Toyon, which exist in abundance, as well as the pines and the oaks, are extremely flammable, and that Cambria is considered, and I'm sure you'll be glad to hear this, a, quote, high hazard area. And like I said, dead tree removal has been done under executive order. With regard to the comments of Mr. Dan Turner, who is a forest scientist, works for the county with decades of experience in this area, he said with regard to the forest, the concerns regarding the forest ecosystem, this is a long-term evaluation that requires decades, which seems a bit concerning and alarming. But he also mentioned the fact, as I just stated earlier, they used a licensed forester in addressing the needs of the forest and the needs of the community. And he says the dual concerns are, of course, forest health and the community, the fire safety for the community. But also, another comment that he made, which once again was something that I wouldn't have even considered, he said we're well known, obviously, as one of the five Monterey pine stands in the world. And so that's something that is very complementary to Cambria. It's one of the things that draws people here is the wooded areas. And he said that the Monterey pine forest is rapidly becoming an oak tree forest, which I found quite interesting. Also, the chipping of the trails, which I know a lot of people feel like, well, why don't we leave the trails natural the way they've been for so many decades? Chipping trails creates erosion reduction, especially obviously on the trails, which is to the advantage of the forest. And also something that was commented on here, there's a rumor that in social media that the Forest Committee was considering suing the Cal Fire over the, and maybe even the FFRP, over the Fiscalini Ranch fuel reduction. We just want to quash that rumor. There's no basis, in fact, at all. There was a comment also with regard to the diseased and poor health of the forest. And part of the reason is because the exclusion of fire taking place in the forest, which is a natural process of the forest, how could you say it, not necessarily destroying, but ultimately renewing itself. The fact that that hasn't taken place because we now live here. So the forest doesn't do its normal thing. And as a result, that makes the forest even more unhealthy. And also the suggestion was made that, well, why hasn't Cal Fire and maybe even the Cambria Fire Department conduct and control burns, which would have been the ideal resolution for the fact that the forest is not able to generate fire in itself, from lightning or whatever. It was determined that the members of this community would not find this acceptable to have controlled burns because of the fear of controlled burns getting out of control. So that's my report from the Oh, one more thing I do want to comment on with regard to what took place on the Fiscalini Ranch. Dan Turner commented on the fact that native vegetation was cut back, not removed, and that it will grow back, and which was a concern of mine and other people. And the ultimate goal of what took place up there on the Fiscalini Ranch is a healthy forest. I didn't come prepared to give a report with regard to the recent meeting that we had, the second meeting of the committee, of the folks that are involved with coordinating the efforts of the San Simeon CSD and the Cambria CSD regarding a cooperative wastewater treatment plant that would serve the needs of both communities, as well as the piping that would take place from San Simeon to Cambria with regard to putting brine waste out, out into the ocean, and also taking the effluent from San Simeon and processing it at our wastewater treatment plant. We're going to be meeting every quarter, and things are moving. It's just this group is just in the embryonic stages. Things are moving very slowly, so nothing really to report there. With regard to the report from the San Simeon CSD itself, that would usually be done by Director Rice, and of course she's not in attendance today. So moving on, I don't see anyone else needing to make any comments with regard to committee and liaison reports. So moving on to the consent agenda. Any comments on the consent agenda before we approve it? Any remarks at all? Yes, Director Pearson.
Yeah, I'll just move to approve the consent agenda as written.
I'll second.
Okay. Well, then, before we move to a roll call vote, I just want to make the comment that in this past month, roughly $33,500 were spent with regard to our water facility on San Simeon Creek Road, and $16,500 of that was for legal fees. And now, yes, Ms. Dodson, if you would do a roll call vote, please.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Howe?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Now moving forward to item regular business. And there's only one item on regular business. We are just rolling along. And that would be discussion and consideration to fill the vacant seat on the policy committee. Director Howe, it's all yours.
Mr. President, would you like me to introduce
the agenda item? General Manager Weigel, with all the salary that we're paying you and I totally neglected you, would you please introduce this item?
Yes, Mr. President. Agenda item 7A is discussion and consideration to fill a vacant seat on the policy committee. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors consider appointing a replacement to fill the vacant seat on the policy committee resulting from the resignation of John Rohrbaugh.
Thank you, and my apologies, Mr. Weigel, for not consulting you first. Thank you. And now, Director Howe.
Thank you. First, to preface my remarks, actually something was said earlier, which I can piggyback on, is that this community itself has an amazing number of very talented, people who really seem to care a great deal about this community. So just as a general thing, we do have in this community an unusually large pool of talented people. That's been my impression. So I want to say that the three people who have stepped up to the plate, and they have been stepping up to this particular plate now for quite a while, to thank them all, for coming forward and making themselves available, and also to say that everybody, all of these, the three applicants that have, or the three volunteers that have come forward, all have talents and abilities which could be of some benefit, both to the committee and the community. So it's an extremely hard and a difficult thing to just recommend one. I would like to say that if should we succeed today in making an appointment, I would encourage the other those who are not appointed to please consider coming to our meetings and participating, because I've just been very impressed with the kind of what each one of these people would bring to the position. I have polled the present members of the committee to just get their sense as to how they would feel, and basically they are essentially happy with all of the applicants. However, I think there's a certain feeling that Ms. Richards would probably be the better choice, and I tend to concur. I found that. Again, I did allude to the fact that this committee requires a lot of work, and I think probably more than we have done so far. It's actually several hours a month, perhaps, probably more than that. And I have found Ms. Richards to be very willing to do the kind of research that's necessary, and while she has a certain a legal background, or some background in doing legal research, and some knowledge of the various people. Well, how can I say this? Anyway, I would be comfortable with her, I think, and the committee members would be comfortable also with her. However, I have to say that all three of these folks are would all make valuable members. So it's kind of it's a difficult problem for me to have to solve. So I think what I would like to suggest is that, let me just turn it back to the rest of the board. Can we hear some discussion maybe, and then figure a way to proceed on this?
Well, when we went through this process previously, I had mentioned that as an alternative, the person that I thought that would be a real asset to the policy committee would be Jerry McKinnon. And I noticed that he isn't here today, although the fact that we're having this meeting on a Wednesday instead of a Thursday may, you know, very well be the reason for that. And I would be able to support Jerry McKinnon.
Yeah, Jerry would be my first choice too. Ruling out Ms. Richards, but Jerry would be my first choice too. So,
yes, Director. Excuse me, Vice President. Oh, okay. Turning off your light. Well, I was going to suggest that we make a motion to vote to approve Ms. Richard, but it would seem from what has just been voiced by the folks on both sides of me that the vote would probably come up 2-2. That would be my take on it. And not seeing any indication otherwise, then I would suggest that perhaps we wait and revisit this item at the next meeting when Director Rice is here, and we can have a vote one way or the other. 3-2 in one way or the other. So does that sound, is that agreeable to everyone?
Yes.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not everyone, but yes.
Well, since no one else said anything, you are everyone. Yes, Director Howell.
I think postponing it until Director Rice is available would be a good idea.
All right. Director Howell.
Okay. I mean, I can sense that that is the sense of the board. And this might be a good opportunity then to suggest that when we do have all five, that the way to proceed would be as an actual election where we have three. In other words, not moving to put one in, but rather let us have an election and we vote. We have to do it publicly, no secret ballot. But that way, nobody's being voted against. That's
yeah,
always
like
bothered
like
me. That's always
like
bothered
idea.
Me. So if you are comfortable with that, I think that would be an excellent way to go.
And I think I agree. The only thing I think we need to consider as a board, if we're changing the way that we do take on elections of individuals to the committees and everything, we're setting a precedence by doing this. So are we going to have a discussion about, is that the way that we're going to do it from now on?
I would suggest that we do have such a discussion because I think it is an important issue, and it's been an area which has been, it's very fraught, and we've had every single appointment to these committees has brought this forward. So I think maybe we do need to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that'd be good to have that on the agenda for next meeting also.
Excellent.
Yeah,
good idea. Great idea.
I like that. Okay.
So, Ms. Dodson, you've made a note of those suggestions?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Should we do this as a motion? No? Do we need to?
You could do it later on the agenda for future agenda items, so it's not on. No, staff will take it forward. There's no need for
cool.
motion.
That's okay.
Oh, that's right. There is no future agenda items. So that's right. We had it at the last meeting. So, yeah, I remember making the comment that we should make future agenda item at the beginning and the end of the meeting. So here we are. We are actually at the end of the meeting, today's meeting. So let me just do this. We are now adjourned from the regular meeting, and we are adjourning to closed session. I see no public comment slips on the items to be discussed in closed session, but we do have folks in the audience. Does anyone wish to get up and address the items on closed session? Seeing none, it is 10 minutes to 4 o'clock. We've been here an hour and 50 minutes. This meeting is adjourned.
And the closed session is agenda item 8.